Welcome to the Unified Endurance Podcast, episode 197. We just checked, so we know we're correct. By we, I mean Rob Jones is with me.
Hello, I'm back.
It's back from Greece, where you actually were in multiple places within Greece.
As I ran through a lot of Greece. I saw lots of sights, ran through a lot of it. Wonderful city.
So,
city? Country.
You weren't in Mykonos on the all-you-can-eat.
No, yeah. Although my taxi driver on the way back, I said to him, if I were to go to one place in Greece, where should I go? And he went, Mykonos.
No way.
No, please. No. I'm not 16.
Yeah.
I'm not, I don't want to make poor decisions. Actually, we met your friend there. Your Greek friend.
Ah, Anastasis.
Anastasis.
My
That's a cool story.
The man I met in the queue.
You met a man in the queue at the Xterra World Championships washing his bike, and you talked to him. Did you tell him that we were coming?
Yeah, well, he actually started talking to me. And
because you're such a sociable guy.
Because you know me, like, nattering away, but I wasn't. And he asked where I was from, and I said, I live in Dubai. And I said, where are you from? And he said, Greece. And I was like, got a friend going to Greece next week to run Spartathlon. And he kind of paused and was like, Spartathlon? And I said, Spartathlon. So he said he had a few friends who'd done it and that he lived close to where it starts.
That's right, yeah.
And then he turns out he organizes Xterra Greece. So I sent his details to Marcus. And then, yeah, you boys met him.
Bumped into him. We went for a walk to see where the race would start, the Xterra race. Stunning. Absolutely stunning. And Marcus messaged him. And he went, I'm working today. Sorry, I'll meet you tomorrow. And then we heard the car beep. And it was just him in this car waving out the window. Hello.
Really?
Yeah. Such a funny guy. So he took us for a drive to show us where the course was. And then the next day, Marcus and him went running. And he was crewing... He was crewing someone in Spartathlon as well, who was very, very similar pace to me. So every time I'd run through one of the aid stations, he'd be there filming me,
nice.
High-fiving. He's such a good character, full of energy.
Yeah, and he sent me a message today, actually, and he said he can't wait for us, because we're going to go to Xterra Greece next year, and he's like, I can't wait for all of you to be together at the same time. I was like, we need to manage this guy's expectations. You
know? We're too much fun.
Great guy. So wait, let's should we start from the beginning?
Go for it.
Spartathlon.
Yes.
I mean, the first time I actually heard this word was when you said it.
Yeah.
I had no idea what it was.
Do you think it was a Spartan race?
I did. Mm. I thought, why does he want to do Spartan? But you then slowly, you know, told me what it was and things. Last week's show, I was with Skinny, and I kept saying 244 kilometers. Some reason, but it's obviously 245.
246.
I'm wrong again.
Yeah.
So let's start there. It's a 246-kilometer running race.
Correct, yeah.
From Athens to Sparta.
Single stage, yes.
So where does the athlon come in?
Good question. Should have prepped me with these questions.
That was my only question.
First question, and I don't know. Where does biathlon come from?
Bi is two, right?
Yeah.
Spart?
Two cities. It actually is a race. If you look at the history of the race, it was actually a run of two parts. So he ran to Spartathlon, Sparty, Athena to Sparty, and then ran back.
That's what it is then, huh?
And then he went from Athens, Athena, back up to Marathon, which is where we get the marathon from.
Spa for Sparta. Atha for Athens and Lon for marathon.
We'll go with that. If it's not true, it's fantastic.
Has to be that.
This is why we're here.
Has to be that.
It could be.
Come on.
All the history petrol heads are sitting here now just screaming at their cars.
So why do I know about UTMB but not Spartathlon?
It's a very different group of people that run this race. I believe lots of guys that run this race love running road races. They love their bad waters. They love marathon running. They love, they generally love tarmac, I believe, more than trail. And it's, to be honest, I've read about this race in books years ago, but hadn't really put much thought to it because I'd read that it was a predominantly road race and that hadn't interested me at the time.
Okay.
And because I ticked off UTMB and I'd got the qualifying time for this from Belfast, I thought, well, this is something completely different that I've never done. It's a real challenge because it's aggressive in terms of the time domains that you have to hit. So, you know, how often are you going to have the qualifying time and then get the lottery to get in? I have to kind of have a go at this.
Mm. Nice.
And it's hard.
We'll come to the race soon. The build up.
The build.
The build up was tricky for you, right? I mean, anytime we here in the Middle East have a race towards the end of summer, you know the build up's going to be hard, despite you being in the UK for a month before. When did you start training to run 246 kilometers nonstop?
So this, it was kind of in my calendar to start with. I always had Ultra X Tanzania, which was at the start of June, which was a 250K stage race over five stages. So whenever I knew I was getting into this race at the end of September, I knew that a decent training block and going into that race healthy was kind of the key. Mm. And if I could come out of that race and keep some momentum, I knew, actually, I was coming back from this race, then I had a week recovery, and then we had our running camp in Chamonix, where we saw you actually in, where did we go? Germany.
Roth, yeah.
In Roth, yeah. So I knew if I had a good run there, a recovery week, and then a good run in Chamonix, that volume would carry me through. And if I put a few big weeks in during my time in the UK, if I could, then I should be in good stead to come back to Dubai, have 4 or 5 weeks to adapt to heat training again, keep the volume steady if I could going into this race. Because traditionally this race has been anywhere from 5 degrees at nighttime to snow, hail, sleet at the top of the mountain to 37, 38 degrees during the day. It's a real, real variance. So I figured preparing for the heat was good because it's going to get hot. But how hot, we don't know. Preparing for the cold is good. That's fine. I didn't really do anything there. But just trying to get some tarmac volume in.
Yeah.
Didn't really work out as I'd like because when I came back from the UK, I just couldn't get the distances in that I wanted to.
Yeah. We chatted a bit about that, didn't we? Various reasons, mate. But, and there's nothing you can do about that now. But can you remember at the time how you dealt with not being able to get the volume in that you wanted to?
Yeah, well, I kept telling myself, do you know what, it's okay because you're running in 37 degrees and it's 80% humidity. So if you're going and doing a high intensity session in that heat and you can get up and do something again the next day and you're recovering, then you're still getting adaptations. You might not be able to go and run 40K weekends like all the other guys in this UK team are posting about in the group, but you're still getting consistency throughout the week. You're still strength training. You're injury free, which I think was huge because I'd always had niggles going into these races, but I had absolutely nothing for this block or the final block leading up to this. And then I had that race that I went to in Saudi Arabia.
Alula.
So that was that hot marathon. That was 40. Gosh, what did I get up to? 47 degrees.
Yeah.
And so coming back from that, feeling really, really good, was a huge confidence booster because it's not going to get hotter than that.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
It didn't. So, yeah, less than ideal prep for you.
Yeah.
But actually, you weren't injured. Did you have any doubts in your mind of whether you would be able to do it or not?
I knew that I could hit, if I got through the first 80K relatively unscathed, then I knew I could drop the pace down to almost 9 minutes a K perhaps and finish, which is still, you can't walk 9 minutes a K. It's a very, very, very fast walk. But knowing that in the back of my mind was a good, if you like, buffer for me. But I didn't want to just come in at 35 hours, 59. I wanted to come in faster.
So, but you were confident?
Yeah, confident but nervous. It's nice a strange combo. One. I'd go through waves of being confident and then waves of being like, shit, this is a really, really long way.
Confident if you could execute what you knew you could.
Yes.
That's a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
So you fly over, you judging by your Instagram, were pretty prepared. You had everything you needed.
Mm-hmm.
You flew over 2 days before?
Yeah, we flew on the Wednesday and the race was the Saturday, yeah.
And what's it like representing GB?
So we actually made the decision to not go to the team hotel and stay with Jeff and Jin. Thanks, Jeff, in an Airbnb and sort of remove ourselves, if you like.
Always just smart.
There's a WhatsApp group and it was carnage. Everyone's messaging, have you got this? We're going to go for dinner. The crew are all going for drinks. And the vibe was very, very jovial and not as relaxed as I would like it to be. And I went to the hotel, the team hotel, to have a look. And it was very, very similar there. The team hotel was being used as the registration hotel. So it was loads of runners coming in and out. And it was just like almost on edge. So we stayed in the Airbnb. We could do what we want. We could cook our own food. We went for a shakeout run 2 days before. You know, we relaxed. We watched the golf. We just packed bags and just generally stayed very, very calm, which I think was a good call.
Yeah, it's normally a good call not to go with Team GB hotels. Yeah.
And I was able to get a good night's sleep because I was in a bedroom on my own.
Yeah.
The big man let me have the bedroom and he slept on the sofa, whereas if I was in the team hotel, it would have been shared, which is not good.
Okay. But, and do you have to represent your country at this race?
You do. Yeah, so they do. They draw the lottery based on slots of nations. Mm. So I think Greece had 40 places, Great Britain had 25. And that's how they do it. They have the pool of athletes, they draw the names out the hat, and they'll keep going until they've got 25 GB athletes. And then they have a wait list. So if somebody pulls out injured in the time between the lottery and the race, then someone else then bumps up and fills that slot.
Nice. So things are going as good as they can be, actually, before race
for you
especially.
Yeah.
You normally like a little bit of drama pre-race, but
I do.
You had none of it.
Do you know why it is? I think I cut out CrossFit. You told me to do the same strength session every week for the, and I did, and it was monotonous, but it worked.
I told you to run up a hill as well, and
yeah, you did tell me to run up once, and I did that, and it worked.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a good point to go to. Actually, is you. I knew this race meant a lot to you, and I knew because it's such a long way, there's so many different ways to actually train for it.
Mm.
But I think the main thing with you, and I think a nice little lesson for listeners, is there's areas for you that you needed to just be told.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of areas where it was like, do what you need to do to be confident. So you were running track sessions early doors on your own at 5 a.m. before the main set, and you actually built a lot of confidence in yourself in those that we saw.
Yeah.
But you decided to do that. Yes. That was your call. And I remember watching you, I think about the third week you were back and you'd done exactly what you wanted to do. And I think a few others in the group had blown up and you were like, I'm really glad I did that. And I was like, he's getting confident, you know? But then I could see if you're allowed to go and, you know, go off and start doing CrossFit workouts with Andy again, it's like, that's not going to help you towards your Spartathlon goal. And I could see with the elevation on the course, like, mate, go and run a hill.
Mm.
You have to go and do that. And it's just a way, it's a really fine mix of being confident that you're going to hit the distance, plus putting in the smart work to ensure that you are backing up the confidence that you have and you're not in a, like, because you can be confident, but sort of, delirious, the word. Like confidence from a place of like, I'll be okay, I'll just get through it. But it's like, it's 246
naive
days.
Naive confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I think you managed it really well, mate. And I think you had a smart enough to listen to some things, but not so much like you're saying you didn't listen to, you should be in the hotel and you kept yourself out there and you didn't pay too much attention to the WhatsApp groups and the 7,000 blogs that have been written on it over for you. And so you blended it really well.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, there's no, I think anyone else in your position from a, let's say, training standpoint, probably wouldn't have been able to get through it. But you've learned so much over the last 6, 7, 8 years, really, of doing ultra running. I feel like it's all led you up to this point of being able to get on the start line of such a big race and do it the Rob Jones way. That's what I would call it.
The unconventional way, yeah. It's interesting you say it, because you sent me a message before the start and said that, I can't, how did you word it exactly? I've ever written down here, you have all the answers to achieve what you're going to start. Be patient.
Yeah, I was thinking before the race, like, what the hell do you tell someone who's running 244, 5 or 6 kilometers? And I was like, cool, there's a standard message of like, no weakness. There's a, you know, shit's going to get hard and whatever. When you're going through hell, keep going, all that bollocks. And I was like, what does he actually need to be told? And I was like, I actually don't know what's going to get him not to finish this race. Even, you know, aside from an injury, and we'll come on to that, but I'm like, you have the answer to anything that's going to come up for you. You've been through sleep deprivation. You've been through not being able to eat. You've been through overeating. Not many people have done that one. you've had hamstring cramps you've got through. Yep. Your heel came off once in a CCC and you finished a race. You've duct taped your heels back on to yourself before. You've gone through chafing. You've gone through, you know, you've chased the wrong bloke and got caught out blowing up too early.
Yeah.
You've gone out too slow and missed cutoffs. I'm like, this guy has done everything. So just be patient with yourself because you've got the answers.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I think that's what I said to you, isn't it?
It was a very good message, because I actually thought about that a lot during the race when things did go wrong. Inevitably, they're going to when you run for a day and a half. I kept thinking to that, I was like, I've done this before. This has happened before. What did I do last time? Did it work? Maybe, maybe not. What would I do this time?
Yeah.
And just, you have time to think and time to fix things as you go.
Yeah. So last question on prep. You might have actually some questions because you put some stuff on your story for Q&A, but how many shoes did you take?
3.
Okay. Different sizes?
3 pairs.
Or one size?
No, I took the same size of shoe, but I took 3 different models.
All Hoka, for sure.
All Hoka. I took Clifton 9s. I took Mach 5s. And I took the Rockets.
Ah, Rockets.
I took Rockets. The reason I took the Rockets, because the last 25K is downhill.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, a carbon fiber shoe running down a 3 or 4% gradient would be brilliant, assuming that my quads have held up for the duration.
I love that.
And if not, then the Mach 5s would be perfect shoe for that, for running downhill.
You were going for a 5K PB at the end.
Exactly right, mate. Exactly.
And how many shoes did you use?
One pair. I did not change out of the Cliftons.
Ah,
I kept them on the whole way. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Did any of the questions pre-race come up for you? We'll go in
pre-race questions.
Timeline. Producing the show was always...
Nothing about pre-race.
So we get to the start line. How the hell does a 246 kilometer run race start?
They have a digital clock at the start line.
Yeah.
Counting down. I like this. They had a countdown till 7 a.m. So they could not be late. And when the countdown went 10, everyone started cheering. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. When it got to 0, the clock started counting up. And at 7 a.m. on the dot, everyone took off like shit off a shovel.
I wondered what was going to happen.
It was carnage.
Did you warm up?
I went up and down the Acropolis stairs a few times just to go to the bathroom. And I actually, my heart rate was elevated. I was sweating a little bit already, so I felt quite warm.
All right.
But yeah, usually I would do a light warm up, even for a race like that, just to get going, because it usually starts quite quickly. But that felt like I was warm enough, because everything's on an angle, nothing's straight up there.
Mm.
So 3, 2, 1, go, bang. All right, we go 4:45.
No.
For the first K, yep. Downhill at the Acropolis. And then you turn the corner, it flattens off. And again, everything sort of 5 minutes a K.
Yeah.
I stayed there for 3K and then slowed down to 5:30s. Find a nice group, was chatting to the group. Yeah, just keep it really, really relaxed. My goal for the first 10 was to not feel like I'd run at all.
Mm.
So the first 5, downhill, doesn't really feel like you're working. You're making videos, dopamine's high. And then you settle into it, you find a group to talk to. And there was a stage where I was like, actually, this is maybe a little bit too quick for what I want to run. I'm going to dial it back a little bit more to 5:35, 5:40, and just find a really nice rhythm at that and just held it at that.
And then you have to do the first 2 marathons. Yes. In under 9 hours.
Yeah, so Pretty much, yeah. There's really aggressive front half cutoffs. They get more lenient as you go through. And you don't get to see any of your crew. The first time you see your crew is at that 44-kilometer checkpoint. And then the next time you see your crew is at 80 kilometers. So I went through the first marathon in 3:58:57.
Not a PB.
Not a PB, unfortunately.
It's a good thing.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
And I got to that point and thought, that felt good. I'm going to try and mimic that again. Got to the... We can talk about the second marathon and a bit more, but that was a bit of a struggle towards the second half because I'd miscalculated a bit on my electrolytes. So started cramping.
How do you miscalculate electrolytes?
It was weird because it wasn't that hot. It was maybe 24, 25. Nice sea breeze. And I was drinking water, but just... probably not enough. I undercalculated what I needed, so I had to just reevaluate during mid-race. Mm. Had to walk for a few minutes. Somebody walked past, sprayed my quads with deep heat that they had in their bag randomly.
Solid.
And then got back to running. Saw Marcus at 80K, told him what had happened, and he's like, right, cool. Then we just adjust your hydration strategy. Fun fact, in 33 hours of running, I had 3 tubes of precision hydration.
That's solid. Do you think there's anything about running 440s downhill at the start that might have affected the quads?
If I felt like I was putting the brakes on or I was working, then maybe, but it didn't feel like I was fighting anything there.
Mm.
Okay. I think it was purely that I was peeing really, really regularly in the first 50K and then it stopped. Right. So it was definitely hydration.
Yeah.
And then I didn't pee basically until the night time. I was catching up the whole way from there.
Outrageous. So you love peeing as well.
Quite bad.
Okay. So we get through double marathon.
Double marathon. 80K.
80K. Well, 84.
Yeah, sorry. 84.4. Mm.
And you're not even close to halfway, mate.
No. No, this
not
is where...
even close.
It's probably this is where I went into the darkest part of the race because you've been running for 8 hours. You've been running at quite an aggressive pace and you get to that. Once you get past 80K, 84K, the cutoffs become more lenient. So you can afford to relax the pace a little bit. Mm. And as soon as that happens, your body relaxes and you start to feel like you're not necessarily fight or flight, or you still are, but not as much as you were before.
Mm.
I was dehydrated. I'd come up with this bizarre strategy that made sense at the time that I spilled out to Marcus and Jeff at that 80K aid station. And Marcus just went, okay, cool, do it. And just left it at that. And it was, at the time it made sense to me. It was, if I hit 100K in 12 hours, and then I hit another 100K the second 12 hours, and then I've only got 50K to do in... 8 hours.
Yeah.
And then I'm there. And they're like, brilliant, sub 30. That's right. And it just made sense in my head at the time. And you're just doing mental maths over and over and over again. You're like, shit, if I walk here for a K, then my average will drop to this, which means extrapolate that. And the goalpost keeps changing based on where you're at and how you're feeling.
You're bargaining with yourself, right?
Exactly.
The whole time.
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, so you basically... told yourself, right, you do this again for another 12 hours and then you'll be at 200Ks. And then I have 46Ks to go.
Exactly.
No problem.
No problem.
What's the reality of it then? Let's say that we got to 100 and, well, what's the halfway mark? 122.
Yes.
Ks in. How does it feel running 122Ks and knowing you're halfway?
It's... you realize the gravity of the situation that you're in. I think I realized that at 80K when I actually sat down. I sat down on a chair for the second time at 80K. I was like, shit. Because 80K, you're like, that's one third of the run. But time-wise, you're really maybe only a quarter. And that's where the time and the distance then start to all split. Because, you know, 80K, 8 hours, fantastic. It's a one-to-one ratio. But as soon as the time gets longer than the distance, you're like, no, this is not what I want. This is going to take too long.
Right.
And then it dawns on you how far that is.
So what do you do?
You just run. You just run and you just break it up into small little chunks. So I would find something to look at or a person to chase or someone to talk to and find their whole life story out. And then once I got bored of them, either slow down or speed up and find the next person, talk to them.
Yeah. The coverage is really good, by the way, on Instagram. Marcus did an incredible job following you along. And what was very obvious was every time you would come into the aid station, I don't know whether you were feeling it, but you would make sure you were in a positive, whether you just vocalized positivity or you actually felt positive, I'm not sure, but you made sure there was no sign of like, ugh.
No. Because as soon as you start feeling or giving out negativity, it just sets your mood, right? And then it sets your running pace and it sets how you're feeling. And then other people feel it. There was one stage I was running, it was through the nighttime and I was running with a guy. Christ, he was so negative. The first thing that came out of his mouth was a negative comment about his race. And then comment after comment after comment was just negativity, negativity. So I stopped to walk because I just didn't want to run with him anymore. It's like, well, you're so miserable to run with. Why do I want to, you know, I'd rather run on my own than run with someone that's just being this negative.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And so, it costs you energy to try and change them.
Yeah. I think another thing, coming into these aid stations, having Marcus there and then Jeff in the second half after his brother dropped out, I was just really, really grateful that somebody would come all the way to Greece to do that. So, you know, people would come in and shout at their crew. And why isn't this ready? Have you got this? It was almost like they would try and force me back out the aid station because I wanted to sit and chat to them and, you know, give them some value, give them some value back for spending all that time. But as you can imagine, there's 15 aid stations and every time you sit down for a few minutes, that all adds up.
It all adds
up,
yeah.
Cuts into your time, right?
Yeah.
So they tried to get me in and out as quickly as possible.
So despite feeling some negative thoughts, you managed to find a way around of either going back to being in a positive state or at least saying positive things to help yourself.
I actually say stuff out loud.
Yeah.
Like say, you know, things like, oh, I want to make Heidi and Hannah proud. This is actually easy. The pain is, you know, it's going to be hard. This is cool. This is what you signed up for. Yeah. I'd scream at people in a happy way. High five people.
In a happy way.
Yeah. We're like, yeah, fuck, only 100K to go.
I'm
Let's
so
get
excited.
I feel like, who is this guy? Yeah. What an idiot. But it's the way that I draw energy from the race and try and put it back into the race to keep me moving.
Brilliant. Okay. Back half then. When do you start feeling like this is in the bag?
When is this in the bag? I think when I broke, so there's a few bits. I got to 184K and I knew that every step that I took beyond that was unknown territory.
That's insane as well, by the way. Like, I know what it's like riding 185Ks in races and that feels like it's never going to end. The fact you ran it is just nuts.
Yeah. To get to that stage and I'm like, okay, the furthest I've ever run is 184 and that was in Belfast and I limped the last 9 hours of that. That was stupid.
With minimal chafe, if I remember.
Minimal chafe.
All chafing in Ireland came to your legs that
basically
day.
My crack was so bad. Apologies. It's true. And get to 184 and like, right, this is uncharted territory. I have really no idea what's going to happen, but I'm still moving. I still feel quite good. Cool. Let's get it. Let's get to 200. And once you get to 200, like you say, it's only 44K to go. And you're going through the night. There was basically 12 hours of daylight, 12 hours of nighttime, 12 hours of daylight. And during the night, everyone started wrapping up warm. Everyone had their head torches on. It got foggy. It got really, really cold. I still had my vest on.
I saw a yellow Hoka vest.
Yellow vest, high vis, obviously. And I changed it to a blue Hoka vest. I changed my shorts to fresh shorts. I put my head torch on, but I turned it off because it was a full moon. Mm. And it was so nice just to run without a head torch on the road. And people couldn't see you coming. They couldn't see you running up behind them. So they'd freak out because they could hear steps, but not see, they'd turn around and not see a thing. So I really enjoyed doing that. And that sort of fueled me through the night. But yeah, once I got to 200K, knowing that there's only 46K left, that's just over a marathon.
And what does it mean to do a race with the history that race has? Of, you know, every step you take was taken by I can't remember the guy's name, who ran it, first of all, you know, way back when. And you're kind of following in his footsteps. Are you thinking about that? Are you thinking about the history you're running through?
Yeah. And you think, so he did this in, I can't remember, whatever BC, but he did it in sandals. He did it probably with a small leather drinks pouch. He did it without fuel, and he did it faster than we're doing it. It's just...
I heard it was so long ago that he used maxi muscle to recover after it. That's how long ago he did it.
Maxi muscle. Amazing. I got a free sachet of that once in a magazine.
Yeah. That was, his coach was called Maxi Muscle or something. Yeah, he did it barefoot.
Barefoot. He went there and back. And it gives you a real, like, we really do sweat the little stuff, don't we, when we're doing these things. We're very, very precious.
Yeah.
And we really just need to do harder things, I think. Yeah, it made me respect distance a lot more and what some of our ancestors have done and what they've done it on.
Yeah.
It's just, that is mind blowing.
So you then, I mean, we were tracking and I was chatting with Marcus as well, and it's like, right, he's got, you know, he's going to be in soon. And he was asking me if I can record the live feed, and I was like, yeah. And then he says, hang on. This might take a bit longer. And it was like, Marcus made the effort to go with you, to support you. And I've been in a position where I've been the only one there and people hammer you with messages asking how you're doing.
Mm.
And it's like, if you cared that much, you should have gone. And so all I want to do is ask Marcus, what's happened? How is he? But I'm like, no, Tom, you didn't go, so you don't get to bother him. So I left it. The last message I got from Marcus was, this might take longer than we thought. And I was like, oh.
Something's happened.
And then he followed it up a little bit later with a message of what had happened. But tell us, mate, what had happened?
So there was a sunlight had come up. We'd run through all the olive groves, and he'd come back from, I guess, what would be fairly flat terrain in the night to undulating road. You pass through their final mountain pass and it's lots of uphill. The last 25K, 21K, give or take, is a long downhill stretch into Sparta. And I changed my running form. I thought about this a lot. Was it a spur of the moment thing, or was it just gradually building up? And there's an aid station that Marcus took as sunlight was coming up, so say 7 or 8 a.m. And I was running weird on my left side, and all my left side toes, or my last three toes, had big blisters on the side. So I'd running maybe slightly differently just to take the pressure off those. And I guess just doing that for 7-8 hours, or not even then, it would have been, I guess, 5 hours. I put a lot of strain on my lower leg. To add to that, the camber of the road was all slanting to the right-hand side.
Mm.
And so my left side, the toes, if you imagine your left side toes are all hitting the road, and you're driving off your toes more on your left side to push off.
Mm.
So try and even that up, I thought, it's a genius idea. On the final hill, I'm going to run with my left leg in the storm runoff drain on the left and my right leg on the road. And then it'll be balanced. It made perfect sense in my head. Granted, I wasn't moving fast. We're maybe talking 6:30 per K, maybe 6:45 per K even. And I just caught, I think I caught my toe edge on a bit of concrete that maybe wasn't flat. And just, I felt the shock. An electric shock go up through my entire left side. I was just like, fire, just pain.
Mm.
Like, fuck, here we go, what have I done?
Yeah.
And looked down at my leg, sore, and it's quite fat. I hadn't looked really down at my feet for ages. Like, have I just done that there? What's gonna go on? So I walked for a bit, walked to the top of the climb, tried to run down the other side, couldn't run down the other side. Like, okay, I can't run, but I can walk. Great. I know it's all downhill. It's 24, 23K. How long have I got? brilliant. If I walk 11, 12 minutes per K, I'll get there in X amount of hours. And so that's what I did. I wasn't going to not finish.
No, and that was, I think we always knew that, mate. But just incredible to do what you did in the last 20K on knowing, in those who've seen your Instagram, knowing the damage that it looked like you'd done to your foot, I think no one would have blamed you for going, it's fucked and I need to stop.
Yeah.
But the fact you carried on and went through it, I just think, yeah. I mean, the fact you ran 246 kilometers is one thing in one hit on the road. The fact you did it in the last 20K with elephantitis in your foot is something else.
The foot was so big. I stopped at the medical. Marcus and Jeff, when it was taking me a bit longer to get there to the aid station, because I was moving really, really well. The checkpoint before.
You were flying along, mate.
I think I'd taken 15 people in a 15K checkpoint. Then Marcus had fed me a ham and cheese croissant that was incredible, and it just felt so good. So I was trying to carry that momentum through, and I felt mentally, physically, fantastic. And they said, look, you just picked off this many people, and I was buzzing, ready to try and do it again in that last section. It's like downhill running. My legs feel really good. My quads feel good. Everyone talks about their quads being smashed at this stage of the race. I had no issues. So this is it. This is my time. I'm on. Yeah. Here we go, sub 30. And it just gone in an instant.
So you finish. You looked as you'd expect to look at the finish. What are you feeling inside? Because I'm sure inside you feel a lot different to, maybe not, but a little bit different to what you look like on the outside.
Yeah. Do you know what I thought maybe that my feelings would have changed, but I still think my initial reaction was that of disappointment, that I felt like I'd let people down for that last 20K block. It was a bizarre feeling to have, like running up to the finish line, I still do feel guilty that I could have finished 3 hours quicker, and everyone was, well, Marcus and Jeff mainly, were waiting for me for that amount of time, and shit, they could have been having beers and dinner. That's what was going through my head. A bizarre thing to think, I know that. But that was the initial thought. And when I finished, I was like, shit, it's still very, very hard to process.
Yeah.
It's like, almost like it's a blur that didn't happen. Because you've seen so much, you've done so much, you've been moving for so long, you haven't slept, you haven't eaten really any real food. It's just like a mess of emotion. It's bizarre. I still don't feel like I've done it.
I think it'll take you a while. It feels like a blur. It'll take you a while, and you're going to wake up. You'll start waking up maybe in a couple of months' time or a few weeks' time and start maybe just smiling to yourself, going, yeah, I've done that. I've done it,
yeah.
But right now you're still, your body probably in a way is like, that was horrendous. Please don't make us go back to that place again. Therefore, we're not going to allow you to think about it now. Maybe. And it's why race debriefs, it's why time on your own after races, and also discussing it like this. But you know, you've got notes on it. I got you this morning to discuss it with the coaches on a different angle. It's why that's so important, because it allows you to go through different emotions of what you've been through, and to almost teach your body or teach your mind, like, it's okay. I'm not going to make you do it again. Maybe I will, but maybe I won't. It's okay to talk about it and talk about the bad bits, talk about the good bits, talk about the hard bits. And eventually you'll get to a place where I'm pretty sure you're going to be there, mate, is where you're just proud.
Yeah.
Because that's what you should be.
Coming back to Dubai, the amount of people, the amount of messages that I had, the amount of people, when I put the post up the next day with the picture of the finish line, the amount of people that shared that picture was just blew my mind.
Because it means so much to everybody who knows you.
To some people, it's like, shit, they feel more emotion to this than me.
I think it's because you give so much to this community, and you've finally given yourself something. You've given yourself something that no one else in this community has, which is almost like the greatest gift you can give yourself. And that's why people love it. Because you now, there's no greater gift you could have given yourself.
I have to think about that.
It's true, mate. And people love to see it.
Yeah. I think people like a good, I think the way it was documented as well was very, very good. Because I was really able to watch the videos afterwards and it told a very, very good and reflective and accurate picture of that race. It's bloody hard.
Yeah.
It's bloody hard.
No one gets through a Spartathlon in an easy way.
No.
No one has a normal or a nice journey. It's not easy for anybody. I mean, even professional athletes, who has the time in a week to train to run 246 Ks in one hit? Just doesn't happen. So everybody who's got there to the finish line has battled insane adversity that you probably only get to battle if you take on such a challenge like that. Any good questions from your Instagram followers? Or are they all based around?
We actually do have some good questions.
How many coffees or?
There is a few questions like that. I do have some stats. I know people love stats and they want to know what was eaten. Do you want to know the full food list? Firstly, the question that always comes in, how much did you fuel and what did you fuel with?
One gel, an hour.
Yeah, exactly. I consumed a total, probably about 1,000 grams of carbohydrate across 33 hours.
Not enough, is it?
Not enough, but it worked. Like for the intensity that I was running, it's probably spot on.
How much is that an hour?
Just over 30 grams, 33 an hour.
Bang on, mate. Zone one, zone two life.
And what did that equate to? 2 packets of dried mango, 400 grams of dates, 1 stealth gel. Yep. Half a bag of Percy Pigs, 5, 10 Ritz crackers, a sachet of almond butter, 1 rehydrated beef stew, instant oats, Nature Valley almond bar croissant, nice. Some chips, 5 small cups of cola, chicken soup, and
a za'atar croissant.
Kebab.
How many ounces of Greek yogurt?
None, actually. Not during. The question actually came in a lot.
How many olives?
Olives. No olives during.
Disappointing, right?
No, loads after. Loads and loads after. Lots of comments that came in was that I had too much coffee.
You had a lot of coffee, mate.
So, I'm going to debunk this. There was 15 aid stations where I could see Marcus. And I took coffee at 14 of those aid stations.
14 cups in less than 30 hours.
Yeah, give or take. Now, the cups that I had were a hotel takeaway cup. I had 1 cup at each one. So it was probably around 40 milligrams of coffee, which is about 20 milligrams an hour. If you average it out.
Yeah, but it's not the liquid, it's the amount of caffeine in that.
Yeah, well, 20 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
But that's not liquid. Normally, it's 100 milligrams of caffeine in an espresso shot, isn't it?
I don't know. This is just what Dr. Google was telling me. In a small cup of coffee, 40 milligrams.
You still didn't beat Jess Towell on a normal day anyway.
I didn't. But then if you look at
6 cups of coffee a day, for sure.
Can't have that. In a Guroc tin, you've got 35 milligrams. In a Morton gel, you've got 100 milligrams. In a Stealth gel, there's 75. So really, per hour, I was under my coffee quota.
Wipe out the half-life.
But this is the thing. So Marcus would ration me on it and he would take care of the... One thing he did was, of all those fueling things, I had things I didn't eat. I had Snickers. I had Naked bars. I had Stoats oat bars. I had
Pretzels.
Yeah. I had...
What else do you like?
More rehydrated food. I had loads. Cheese. When I came into these aid stations, he gave me 2 things. He gave me a sweet and he gave me a savory and he sent me on my fatigue. Way. Exactly. Yeah. So he took away all the decision fatigue.
Yeah.
What else did I have? How many trail poos did you have? 2, both in the night section.
Only 2 poos?
Yeah, straight after the kebab.
It's disappointing.
Had the kebab 5 minutes down the hill, kept going, had a poo. I'm such a positive person. How do you get through the lows? I think we kind of discussed that.
Talked about that.
Did he have any larger meals or higher carb meals? Yes, that would, I guess, be the oat sachets and the rehydrated beef stew that I had.
Yeah.
Would I do it again? No.
No.
I don't think I would.
Never say never.
If I were to do it again, the only thing I'd be chasing was time.
Yeah.
I think I got everything I needed from that race.
I think you'll do it again.
What are the stats? Step count, people wanted to know. 283,838 steps.
You can relax for the rest of the year, huh? Covered it.
This is interesting. Do you want to know the time spent ascending during the race was 13 hours 40.
Oof.
So it tells you how non-flat that race is.
Wow. That's horrendous.
And my max pace, 407 per K.
Nice. At the start.
Definitely at the start. And I think that's enough stats.
Yeah, good stats, mate. I looked at your training peaks. Your run was like 1,088 TSS.
Is that what it was?
Which is just insane. Insane. Mate, huge congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. It's not easy to come on here and share thoughts only 1 week on. So appreciate your time into that, mate. And we're going to finish up the show with chatting about our amazing community.
Yeah.
What a weekend it was. We were Saturday morning. You may have seen three hooligans riding through Dubai Hills downtown and then Deira Islands on mountain bikes because we were off to support the Roy Nasser Memorial Triathlon, which has now moved to Deira Islands. We saw VK got second in age group there, and AJ and Henry, both legends, they both finished, and it was so hot, mate. So hot. They all did the Olympic distance. And
oofed.
Yeah, I mean, we thought the weather was calming down a bit, but no, the minute it got past about 7:30 a.m., tough. So well done to those lads down there. We then, on the gym side, we had seven teams competing at the Precision Games on Saturday afternoon.
That's right. That was outside as well.
They were absolutely fried, mate. Yeah. So Saturday was a big day. Cannot forget this. My wife, Carmen, was doing her first cycling race with the Innerfight Ladies cycling team. There was a breakaway from the Dubai police early on. They couldn't catch, so they stayed sort of out on their own, and the group never caught them. But then it was a sprint for fourth place, which Boz put down 500 and I think 20 or close to that. It's 500 odd watts for a minute.
For a minute.
To get fourth overall and first in her age group in her first ever cycling race. And she said Jess, Carla, and Siobhan just were the best domestiques she could have asked for. They chased attacks. They made sure they were confident in the peloton. They put Boz in the right position. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing to see. But, you know, bike racing is no joke. So the fact they've gone into it in about 6 months prep and come out with that result is just phenomenal. So
these
well
are
done,
professional
ladies.
Teams as well that they're
yeah,
racing
they're
against.
Racing professional teams. Yeah,
there you go, incredible.
So the only net downside of that is they need a team car in their next race, and so they're going to have me and Skinny talking in on radios into their ear in our non-normal accents, which we can't wait for. Put it in.
I expect you'd have walkie-talkies on extension cords.
Yeah, and three iPads all not doing what they should be. We're going to have mountain bike wheels in the back just so we have some spare wheels even though they don't fit the bikes. We've got it all covered.
Who's going to lead the doping program?
Yeah, we'll look into that. We'll find some dodgy doctors.
2024 season.
Yeah. Sunday was a big day for our running community. We were down at Dubai Harbour.
Very big day.
There was a 5, 10 and 15K option.
That's right. It's the first run race of the season.
First one of the season. Yes. And there was about 20 to, yeah, I think Steph said 22 runners down there. A couple of people going after some specific goals. AB wanted sub 20 in his 5K and he went 19 minutes 50.
It's very good.
It's good for that guy. And then there was Rushil was doing a long run for New York. He ran 10K prior to the 15K and then put himself in the bin in the 15K.
Yep.
Which is a nice way to mimic an end of a marathon.
I had quite a few guys actually running that race, the 15K, to use as prep for Amsterdam, just to dial in their race pace and make sure it feels comfortable.
Solid. I saw Cathal on the podium.
Yeah.
Did he take a cheeky, cheeky age group?
He was testing his race pace.
Definitely not. Way quicker than race pace.
I told him to run 4:30 and he ran 4:31.
Oh, he actually failed it. Cathal, come on.
It's because he said he took the outside edges.
Josh Hinden had a good race as well.
Yeah.
And Tom Hager.
He picked up a podium.
Can't say my nickname for him on air, but Tom Hagger, you'll imagine what his nickname is, took podium as well. Skinny overall 15K winner.
Beat a Kenyan.
3:29 per K for 15K in, got to be above 30 degrees, 35 probably.
Yeah.
Plus he'd ridden the day before with us. So we set off from Marcus's house in Dubai Hills at 5:29. We arrived back at his house at 11:29. So we rode through. It was melting. It said 43 degrees on my Garmin for the last hour. It was like into the light all over again.
So he went in lightweight, basically. So just fully dehydrated.
He came round my house on Saturday evening. I fed him a tomahawk steak and he had two hobgoblins and he was primed for his race on Sunday. Oh, fair play to you, Skinny. It was excellent. And then you were with the trail team on Saturday.
That's
in
right. We were
Cat Springs.
Springs. Yeah. What happened there? It was hot as well. It was hot as well. Classic. Everyone went too hard on the first loop and suffered for it on the second loop.
But what a weekend. Really, really good. And this weekend coming, Amsterdam Marathon is Amsterdam here.
Yes.
20 athletes from Dubai will all head That's over right. to Amsterdam to either run the Amsterdam Marathon or half marathon. Steph is in charge. She's made it happen. And it's going to be really cool to watch how it all unfolds over there. Simon will be over there from Inify Island doing social media stuff. So if you see him, give him a wave, say something happy into the camera. Marcus will also get there on the Saturday. He's having a crack at the marathon. And it'll just be very exciting to watch what will inevitably be a great weekend. Happening this side of life, we've got a mountain bike race on Sunday at Mushroom Park. There is four or five of us going down there. So if you're down that way, come and say hello. And I will likely show you where I fell off and scraped my elbow or knee. Mate.
Excellent.
Thank you very much again.
Thank you.
Don't forget, we're brought to you by Hoka and Precision Fueling and Hydration. You can go onto their website and use code RUNSTRONG23 and you get a little discount.
Clifton's are endorsed for long runs.
Clifton is... Nice. Yeah. You should get blue tick on your Clifton's, mate.
I actually messaged our Hoka guy and said, just so you know, I ran the full distance in these shoes. He goes, mate, I'll drop you a new pair off. They cannot be fresh.
Not fresh. They should go up to about 600K. So you've got more time.
A few more training runs in them.
Awesome. Thank you very much for listening, guys. Thank you, Rob, for being the champion that you are. We'll be back next week.
Have a great week.